This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Three Democrats are running for their party's nomination in the 61st Statehouse District. That includes most of the city of Portage, as well as Oshtemo, Prairie Ronde, Texas, and Schoolcraft Townships. Thomas Whitener is one of the Democrats who hopes to win his party's nomination August 7th and challenge Republican Representative Brant Eyden in the fall. Thomas Whitener, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Please introduce yourself to the audience and tell us what you would like to do if you're elected to the State House.
My name's Thomas Whitener, Democrat, lifelong Democrat, running for state representative. Well, I live here in Portage with my wife and have for a number of years. If I'm elected to the State House, I want to take my expertise as a game designer, specifically a systems and balance designer, to make sure that the rules that we all have to live by are fair for everyone who lives here in Michigan.
You say as a game designer, that's what you do for a living?
Yes. I've been a game designer for about 10 years now. It's what I trained to do in school. Specifically, my focus is in systems and balance design, like I said, which means that I write sets of rules, and then I make sure that those sets of rules that are large and complex and interactive are fair for everybody who plays the game.
And these are video games that you're
designing? Video games, yes.
I'm sure some people are hearing that and thinking, well, how do you go from game designer to someone who is making policy at the state level? What's the connection? How do those two things mash up?
They're actually very similar. And it's something, how similar they are surprised me a little bit when I started to, after the 2016 election, I think a lot of us decided that we wanted to get more involved. And so I started looking at state law and reading it more and more closely. Most of us don't really take a close look at the laws that govern our lives. But when you do, when you have the background that I do, you start to pull out how these systems are built, how they interact with each other, and how they all work toward goals. And that's exactly what we do in games. But we write for different purposes in games. You're not trying to make people's lives better. You're trying to make someone have a good time. But as long as you have a set goal, you can design systems toward it. And the experience carries over quite well, I think.
Are there particular issues that you can identify where you say, well, my experience as a game designer is going to lead me to be able to represent my constituents better?
Yes. The one that comes to mind most easily is education and the way our education system is funded specifically. Education is funded, and this is a simplification because it's a very complex system, but by and large, from the state side of things, education is funded based on per student enrolled. So you have students who are enrolled in the school, and that number leads to a calculation based on the area, but leads to a calculation of how much money the school gets. Well, what ends up happening is you achieve something called a positive feedback loop. It's what we call it in games, where schools that have high enrollment do well because they get lots of money and they can fund the programs they want. They can pay their teachers well. They can pay for supplies. They can pay for upkeep. But if a for-profit charter school pops up in the area, or people are pulling their kids out of school for some reason, then the funding for that school starts to drop. And it pushes a positive feedback loop in and of itself pushes toward the extremes. So people who are doing well do better, and people who aren't doing well do worse. I look at this and I say, well, the system is broken. The way that we're funding is broken. We need to move toward a negative feedback loop, which sounds bad, but all it really means is that it allows people who are doing well to continue doing well at the level that they are, or schools that are doing well to continue to doing well, and then the schools that are not doing as well to move toward that median level to get them back up to an acceptable point. And the way you do that is, instead of funding per student enrolled, you fund based on the possible enrollment. So that if you pull students out of a school, you're not actually changing its funding level. You're keeping the same amount of money from the state in the school, which means that you have a higher average spend per student, which allows higher achievement, or at least higher investment and higher possible achievement.
So, but if you're going to allow schools to be funded, as you say, at the highest possible enrollment, and yet you're still going to ensure that the students who leave that school are properly educated wherever else they go. Does that mean that the state has to put more overall money into education?
No, I think that the voucher system, the system of shifting state funds, our tax dollars, away from the public schools that they were intended, that at least in my estimation, they should be funding toward these for-profit charter schools and the schools that the vouchers are going toward, that system needs to be discontinued or at least severely curtailed so that the overall investment in the system can stay the same. We're not having to collect more and spend more to put money in the pocket of the owners of these for-profit schools. The for-profit schools statistically haven't performed better and in some cases are performing worse than their public school equivalents in the same areas. The data has shown us that. And I don't know why we would fund a less effective system with our tax dollars when we have a public education system that has been in place. I'd rather fix the systems that we built previously then throw them out and try something completely new and untested.
Just want to note on the term voucher, because some people's ears are going to perk up because mm-hmm. they associate that with private schools, which is actually banned in the Michigan Constitution,
right,
or for parochial schools. What you're talking about is when the per student state grant follows a student from that public school to the charter school.
Yes, right? Yes. Sorry. That is called voucher systems, and in other systems that I've been looking at. And there are two things that make good game designers, and the first is that you can't let a problem sit in front of you and not try to solve it, and the second is you have to be a sponge and just read and learn everything you can get your hands on. I've been reading state law in other states, specifically Massachusetts and Colorado and North Carolina and others, and trying to find solutions that have been tested in other systems as well and seeing how we can apply those to Michigan.
So when it comes to charter schools, are you saying that you don't think the state should have charter schools at all, or is there a different way that they should be funded?
The public school system isn't going to work for every child, isn't going to work for every family. I'm willing to admit that and happy for there to be other options in the private sector that explore the niches that need to exist to serve those students. I think that's important, and I think that's a good thing. But I don't think those are things that should be funded by the state, by our tax dollars. If someone wants to run a for-profit company, even if they're in the education sector, then we need to ensure that the education provided is up to the level that we require for our students here in Michigan. But we also need to make sure that the public schools that everyone has access to, that lift us as a society and build our communities, those need to be funded properly. And that needs to be what our tax dollars go to.
So if someone wants to go to a charter school, you're saying they should pay for that themselves?
Yes.
You are the first candidate who has been in here since the situation in Parchment became known regarding PFAS in the water.
Yeah.
What's the state's responsibility and role here, not just for Parchment, but for communities throughout Michigan?
So the emergency response and the speed with which the local community and the state has tackled this as soon as it became a big story has been impressive. It's good to see the response be as quick, but I think it was 7 years ago, the MDEQ received the warning about PFAS and the fact that there was contamination and we needed to expect that. We needed to be looking out for it. And we haven't been looking out for it well enough. The fact that the Parchment water crisis was such a surprise is part of the problem. I look at everything like system as a series of systems. We need to have a system in place that takes this information when we get warnings from scientists and processes it and then puts into place detection schemes so that we can find these issues. There's all sorts of things that could have been done to make sure that we were watching out for this, but the systematic defunding of the Department of Environmental Quality has really put a hamper on our ability to expect these crises and to stop being reactive to them and start being proactive. I don't want us to only respond to these crises once they've started causing harm. we need to be in the business of preventing harm.
Michigan voters will decide in November whether or not to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. Do you believe that they should approve that ballot proposal?
I believe that they should. I'm not a marijuana user. I have in the past. I went to college. But it's more of an issue of civil rights to me. In general, prohibitions, whenever they've existed, have been used to further oppress already oppressed people. And I'm of the opinion that those type of prohibitions that don't have a basis in public health, because marijuana isn't a Schedule I drug. It doesn't fit the definition. It has medical uses. It's not as inherently dangerous even as alcohol. Prohibitions that exist, like marijuana, typically are just used as a club to keep down people who are already put down. And that's not the type of thing that we need to have here in Michigan. It'll also open up a lot of new revenue streams. We've seen that in evidence in Colorado. It doesn't, at least the preliminary data coming out of the states that have gone for, the states and municipalities that have gone for legalization, doesn't show an increased usage in the drug by children or young adults. It doesn't tend to show vehicle accidents rising by a statistically significant amount. It doesn't lead to an increase in other harder drug use. And so the data tends to point toward it being a good thing, something that can get a lot of revenue for the state, something that can open up new business opportunities in our communities, while at the same time not having a lot of the boogeyman negative effects that a lot of the detractors of these types of proposals have suggested would come to pass.
Lots of Democrats are hoping for a big year in 2018.
I'm one of them.
And they are hoping that perhaps Democrats can take control of the state house. I've seen one analysis that said that this district would be an important one for Democrats to pick up if they are going to have control of the state house. Of course, 61st state house district's been Republican forever. If you're talking to Democratic voters, how do you tell them that Thomas Whitener is the guy who can get there in November and can change the outcome?
People talk a lot about a blue wave. And there is definitely a level of energy, a level of enthusiasm, and a level of focus from the Democratic Party that I haven't seen at least since 2008. But the blue wave doesn't happen as some sort of mystical force that sweeps in from the edges of the universe to change everyone and make everybody vote. It happens because you've got candidates out there who are wearing the soles off of their shoes, knocking on doors and getting voters excited and getting people out there. You've got voters who are reading the news and they're upset or they're energized or they have a candidate that they believe in and they want to get out there and they want to vote. The blue wave isn't an external happening. The blue wave is us, and it happens because of hard work. I've been working hard for the last, goodness, it's been about 6 months now, contacting voters, getting in touch with community leaders, speaking at events, knocking on people's doors, and wearing the soles off of my shoes, trying to get in contact with everyone I can. Trying to build that blue wave. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take work. And I've never been afraid to work hard in the past, and I'll never be afraid to work hard in the future. And that's what you can count on if you elect me to be your representative.
Thomas Whitener is one of three Democrats running for state house in the 61st district. That includes most of the city of Portage, as well as Oshtemo, Prairie Ronde, Texas, and Schoolcraft townships. Thank you very much for your time.
It's been a pleasure.
The winner of the August primary will challenge Republican Representative Brant Eyden in the fall. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.